Hello and welcome to another episode of Shuffling Notes, where we discuss songs, albums, artists, and all things music. I'm your co-host, Prankit.
And I'm your co-host, Razi.
And today we are going to discuss a Welsh heavy metal band that goes by the name of Bullet for My Valentine. It's a little different from the sort of albums we've covered before, I guess. You know, we're diving into a new genre here. This band was formed in 1998. And they had a different name called Jeff Killed John. Although I believe it was when the band members were really young, they used to go by that name and do covers. But they created the name Bullet for My Valentine when they had sort of a change in their tone, as well as the type of music they do. They sort of shifted more towards metalcore. So, I mean, Razi, what's your sort of experience been with this sort of genre? Like, have you heard sort of, you know, we haven't really spoken about metal that much over the years. So I'm just curious to know, you know, what your experience has been.
I've heard Bullet for My Valentine, I think, started from Tears Don't Fall.
That is a song, like, I feel like even people who don't know who Bullet for My Valentine is, like, they've probably heard that song, I feel like.
Yeah, and it was the trending thing at the time, and it really had a beat to it. Besides that, I've heard Bullet for My Valentine here and there, like being in a similar, like, same kind of circle and stuff, and
you mean like within metal, the different like subgenres of metal?
For example, I've heard a lot of Metallica, I've heard Slipknot, Dead by April,
Killswitch Engage, maybe, perhaps.
Killswitch Engage, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've heard this music before, and it did take me time to actually settle into this. I'll be very honest.
Yeah. So, just to sort of preface it, the album that we're discussing today is their second studio album, titled "Scream, Aim, Fire," which was released in 2008. And you know, this, like, the first album was called The Poison, and I'm pretty sure we're going to come back to that album later on, because that's also a great album. But one of the reasons I selected this particular album, for me, it's like super nostalgic, because back in the day when I was more into metal music, I used to listen to this album quite a bit, so I'm quite familiar with the songs. And so I thought, you know, why not? Let's have a talk about Scream, Aim, Fire. And I think it was before I sort of knew you. As such, so it was, you know, back when I was really into the metal scene, and you know, just to provide more context, like, Bullet for My Valentine, generally they're sort of classified as metalcore, but this particular album, it has sort of, compared to their first debut album, it has a bit less of like screaming and growling going on, and it's sort of categorized more as like thrash metal. Which is, you know, again, it's usually anti-establishment type lyrics, but in terms of music, it's like that high speed, you know, double bass and super fast, like, guitar riffs and so on, which is, like I said, like a subgenre of metal itself.
And do you know about the formation of the name?
I tried to look into it. I couldn't really find anything, substantial. I'd imagine the name Bullet for My Valentine and going by, you know, that era of the 2000s, I feel like part of the name was probably, it does have a commercial appeal, especially when you look at, you know, bands from that era. So I you know, a lot of the songs, even from their first album and even in this album, like, a lot of them do have to do with like a relationship, especially in the first album as well. So I imagine it's sort of a combination of writing about the type of content that they write about, but also a name which is sort of, you know, if you hear the name Bullet for My Valentine, I guess it makes you curious a little bit, catches your attention a little bit. But I don't know if there's an actual history behind it. I know Jeff Killed John was about something that had happened at, I think, high school or college or something when the Bad members were very, very young. But Bullet for My Valentine, I couldn't find anything substantial about why they called that. But it is an intriguing name.
I did read something. It was...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, so they're short at... So first, I think they went as New Metal, I think.
Yeah.
New Metal. And then...
Well, no, New Metal was the type of music they did, was New Metal.
Oh, all right.
When they started off, yeah, when they started off... I mean, New Metal is, you know... It was becoming popular, but then it didn't really take off like it was, like people thought it would. And then a lot of the bands sort of that did play new metal, they sort of scattered out into these other subgenres like trash metal and you know, metalcore and all of that.
Yeah, because here it says, as new metal had started to become less popular, the band gave it one final shot by changing their name to Bullet for My Valentine. Which refers to loving lyrical content.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I suppose that's a reference there to the name there.
So, I think that's New Metal, which they went by, and then they changed it to Bullet for My Valentine, which I think then they have sort of focused more on the lyrics. I mean, when we do the previous albums, we'll also find like maybe a contrast between these.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think lyrics, you know, as we go through the songs and tracks as well, you know, I think they do stand apart a little bit, and they also have, you know, they have a very unique sound. It's metal, and especially this album, right? It's metal, but tonally it can be quite different from, you know, other bands that might reside in this own, like, in this type of space. But I guess we'll, you know, we'll discuss that, we'll get into it as we go track by track. Just quickly, you know, the lineup itself. So Matthew Tuck is the sort of you know, your sort of front man, lead vocals, rhythm guitar, and he has done some of the, like, the guitar solo part, like in the intros on some of the songs. And then Jason, and Jay is like his nickname, so Jay James, he's again backing vocals and bass. And one of my favorites, Michael Padgett is like his nickname again. He's the lead guitar and backing vocals, and man, his guitaring is just ridiculous. And then you have Michael Thomas, I think, who goes by the name Moose, on the drums. And again, it's pretty, you know, his drumming style is very unique, and you've got all the double bass and everything, but he's got, you know, even that, he's got like three tom-toms, you know, like usually you have two tom-toms on the front. So, you know, they have a unique style and unique setup, and that's why I feel like the sound as well comes off quite, you know, different from other bands that I've heard.
I have this one introductory note that I wrote, which is created. So they created their own league of sorts, or at least, you know, that's how they started the idea for this band, to not play the, you know, the trending metal or what's catching on with people, but actually just do what they want to do and people might like it. So, like, they started experimental idea, and to do what they like and not what is trending is what.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think, you know, it has that philosophy that they might have. I know, you know, going forward in the next few albums, they've had, like, the band internal members have had issues with the direction they're headed in or the type of music they're putting out. So it'll be interesting to actually do the other albums as well on the show and sort of see how the music has evolved, as well as, you know, how they've kind of gone back and forth as well with their sound a little bit. But, you know, I think for me, Scream Aim Fire is almost like the sound, like the you know, Bullet for My Valentine sound, and then everything else, it has sort of evolved from it almost. And also, you know, part of which contributed to the way the songs are, you know, singer Matt, he had a surgery like 7 months before they recorded this album. You know, basically when they did the first album, The Poison, that album did have a lot of sort of, like, intense screaming you know, it was vocally demanding. And so when they went on tour, you know, Matt wasn't very careful with his voice. He didn't really necessarily do like warm ups and stuff beforehand.
Yeah.
And so he really messed up his throat. And later on, I think he got laryngitis and so on. So he was recovering from the surgery, which limited a little bit of what he could do vocally. And in fact, I think in some of the songs, they use his voice from a previous demo that he recorded, as opposed to the actual final recording, just because he was going mm-hmm. through that. But that had that really affected the sound, which is why, you know, the album in general does have less screaming. But I think that did help it with a bit more of a mainstream appeal, because it wasn't as alienating to non-metal listeners. You know, so I think it's a funny way how certain things turned out, so to speak. And I know that they've also re-recorded some of these songs in later albums. So that's interesting.
Okay. And, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that you were such a big BFME fan.
So, I mean, yeah, especially back in the day. So I know I kind of lost track of them because, you know, the type of music, I haven't listened to metal in a while. Not like this anyway. And then, you know, you're attached to a certain set of bands, and then those bands change and evolve, and the music changes and evolves, and then you also change. And sort of at some point, I kind of stopped listening to them. But listening to them now for this has really like reignited my sort of passion for that type of music. So that's why I'm looking forward to this discussion. And I guess just one more quick note before we sort of dive into it. You know, there's a lot of different versions of this album, Scream Aim Fire, as they usually are. The album that we're talking about is the deluxe version, which is available on the streaming services. So that has like four additional songs at the end. But there are other versions of this album as well. There's like a Japanese version, which has a bunch of other songs, including like covers. There's like a cover from like an Ozzy Osbourne song as well, Crazy Train. So, you know, there's a lot of different versions of it. But I think the one we're talking about today is the deluxe version. So the first track on the album is
Scream Aim Fire.
Nice.
I mean, that's actually true.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I didn't know you had a passion for sort of screaming and.
I mean, I've done it before. For we'll be going in different albums such as these. So this was my Bullet for My Valentine, and I think around 2008, 2010 was my. So my brother was into hard rock metal, and he used to roar and he had a band who used to cover these songs, and they used to do a lot of Slipknot and stuff. So
yeah,
I picked up the, you know, okay, you know, you can scream out, and that's how it is, that's the song. So yeah. I had my, we'll get into it, but
So you know, the Scream Aim Fire is you know, the first track on the album, and I believe it was also like the first demo track that they actually recorded, and you know, it really does, I feel like, set the tone for the album, and you know, set their sound, that this is what mm-hmm. their sort of subgenre within metal is. And you know, it just kind of throws you in the deep end from the first song, right? It is an intense song. It starts very like high energy just off the bat, just pushes you into it, you know, because a lot of albums, they start mellow and then they dive into like the sort of, you know, the deep end.
Yeah.
But this really just starts off very high energy, just high octane. And I mean, what, you know, how what did you think about the track in general?
It's as you said, it's a very high energy. Like I actually was expecting something more that, you know, people sort of, or artists put you in this comfortable zone when you get into the zone of the actual album. And here I was actually just thrown into the deep end with the, I mean, there was a lot of roaring in this, like that.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think it's the way he did it, if you really listen, you know, there's a lot of like shouting as well. And then the screaming part is not as intense as you might first think when you first hear it. You know, he's definitely protective of his voice as well a little bit. Especially if you compare it to the first album, The Poison. But it's an interesting sound.
Yeah, but so I think as we'll be going further into the track list, it's a lot of it is also covering like a war scene or a war that's happening. And this is sort of, I mean, this song, as well as putting you in the deep end, it also is sort of setting up the scene for a war, like with the lyrics, because again what how they intend the, you know, the name of the whole band to be, more of the lyrical content.
Yeah, so this, I mean, it's talking about World War One, that you say stuff. So like over the top, you know, that's a reference to like trench warfare and stuff. And it's just about, you know, scream, aim, fire, like what I guess what you might feel on like a real battlefield. There's not a lot of time you have. You just got to react and shoot. And I think, you know,
it's
the
also
song,
because
the music. The men
you know, dying because their only way out is to die, because they get drafted. And you know, things like that, like putting in things like that makes the song. I mean, I would never, if I just read the lyrics, I would never imagine roaring in as a part of the song. But it really works well with it, because how the roar goes,
you in the battlefield, like
so the roar goes scream aim fire. That's a lot like ready aim fire, and know, it's got that sort of
it's like it's
pain
like
as
the
well
general, you know, yelling it out on the battlefield, sort of right. But yeah, I mean, you know, that the way that they sing it and then the music, it really just puts you in that battlefield. Like you feel that high octane, you know, imagine playing like a first person shooter, you know, video game, what with this playing in the background, almost like Doom or Doom Eternal or something, right? With all of that. So it kind of really puts you in the middle of that battlefield, musically, which I think works quite well. And, you know, the, like the guitar melodies playing as like Matt's singing. And you know, that guitar solo as well, it kind of really sets the bar for the rest of the album, that this is the level of like technique that's going to be used in the solos and you know, in the music going forward, even the drumming. You know, it's a very interesting first song, basically. It's almost like here's the best bits of what you're going to see in the rest of the album.
It's a good introduction, as we can put it.
So yeah, from Scream on Scream Aim Fire, we move to the next song, Eye of the Storm. And I think this song just sort of continues on from the end of the previous song, like musically, the way the previous song ends and the music, the intro of this one starts. It almost just feels like a continuation. But I don't know if you noticed, but the especially the intro guitar riff, it really reminds me of, you know, Metallica's song, Master of Puppets. Like, now that I've said it, I'm sure you've heard that song, right? If you go back and listen to Eye of the Storm, that intro riff is just, it's reminiscent in a way that you could tell, you know, Metallica are one of their inspirations in terms of the sound that they use.
Yeah.
The only thing is that the guitar distortion is, like, is very different in this song compared to, you know, Master of Puppets. But that intro riff, it's very reminiscent the way it sort of starts off.
That's true. There's another track which has the Metallica reference in it, but I think, I mean, I once I got to know Bullet for My Valentine means to love the lyrical content. I always heard the song while first few times reading what they're saying, and that sort of, I mean,
it can be
that
sometimes hard
into...
to understand the lyrics because they sing it so fast, and you know, when you have the screaming and stuff, sometimes like, what did they say?
With the scream, I do have to double check a few times, but It's just, I mean, I was reading it along with it because there is a sort of emotional connect that I could make for the lyrics that they were saying and how they were singing it. And as we've gone before this, Simon and Garfunkel, The Who, The Doors, everyone, like they've had a way of putting in a sort of emotion into their music, while this is a completely different, or I mean, for me, it's a very new way because I've
It's a new
never,
like genre that you're getting into almost, right?
I mean, I've heard this and I do keep hearing it, but then I hear it like once in maybe a few months. But over this past few days, it was just on repeat, and it was something new to get into.
I don't know if I'm just crazy or like if you pay attention when he every time he says, "Can you hear the thunder?" I feel like you can actually hear the thunder. They've put some sort of sound effect or something in the background. It's not very evident. It's a bit faint. But every time he's like, "Can you hear the thunder?" and you hear like that thunder in the background, I thought was very interesting. And again, overall, like Screaming Fire, I'd say the guitar riff and the melodies accompanying the vocals, it's just very musically interesting. And then that guitar solo again is just completely ridiculous. It's just amazing what they achieve in all these songs. But
It's,
yeah, no,
I
I guess
mean,
ly lyrically,
yeah, it's lyrically, it's talking about being aid to someone who is, in the middle of a crisis, or in this case, a
Just
storm.
being, yeah.
And it's so the music also, by the end of it sort of ensembles a storm, kind of eye of the storm, kind of visual perspective. Like I could imagine
Just with the
maybe a time
music,
lapse or
right? Yeah.
something, the eye of the storm sort of coming together, and with the music it sort of made sense.
Yeah. No, completely agree. Yeah, I mean, from so you know, I think great second track as well. Continues on quite flawlessly in terms of tone, from the first track. Now the third track, Hearts Burst Into Fire. I think this is where there's like a tonal shift in the album a little bit. So I think this song is much less like it's not as hardcore metal. But this is one of my favorite songs of the album. Let me just say that. But it's a much more, I'd say, sort of lighter song in terms of the tone and the music that's being accompanied. There isn't really like a proper guitar solo either. So I think it's definitely tonally very different from the first couple songs.
I mean, I've got so this one has so many transitions that it goes through, from like in terms of music itself. The music intro is quite long, I think, in this. And so I've
Well,
written
the intro
it's
guitar is
got
just
the
so like
Metallica
uniquely
feeling.
refreshing. Yeah, and the
So
and like
it's
that
got the
riff as well,
Metallica
yeah.
feeling in this, and then
In
it
the
sort
sense
of
of the
builds
you mean the
up.
clean
And
guitar sound being overlaid and then you get the heavy
I think,
electric.
yeah, so I think it's the same sort of production or process, but
Yeah, no,
so I got
it just
that
sounds
sort of
very
feeling.
yeah. Yeah, it's
And
very
along with
refreshing
that,
in its
it's
sound, yeah.
I think it was this song which made me decide 30 Seconds to Mars is the next one.
Ah, okay, interesting.
I got a, I so after
Yeah,
the metallic,
yeah.
as I said, it's going through transition, so it ends up on a Bullet for My Valentine kind of
Yeah,
note. But
yeah.
in between Metallica and that, there is a 30 Seconds to Mars kind of feeling. I think in the first verse, it's a Jared Leto kind of, it's the
Oh, that's
same
very
pitch, the
interesting. Yeah,
same
yeah.
kind of.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think. Oh no, I mean, there's another one. This I really liked this one compared to the first two, but there's another one which is my
The,
favorite,
I think
which
this is a much more sort of like, if you're not a metal fan either, I think you'd still maybe appreciate it because it's not as sort of heavy as the first two. And, you know, as I was saying, like, that clean guitar, that riff in the beginning as well, it's just, I just think it's so uniquely refreshing. You know, it really, that music just bursts into your ear, that intro riff. And, you know, I thought the way that the song is done, right, there's, like, they use these harmonies in parts, you know, when it's like, I'm leaving, I'm screaming, I've been far away. Like, those lines, I don't know, it's just very catchy to me. And, yeah, I mean, you know, in the bridge as well, I think there's like that clean guitar that comes in. It just feels like a very different song from the first two, I'd say. And you know, lyrically, I know it's about being far away from like your loved ones, mm-hmm. or like just feeling like insecure or missing them. But I know somewhere one of the like band members, game. It might be Matt. Yeah, so one of the band members, I think it was Matt, mentioned it. I think they mentioned it. I might just be making it up, but I think it's partly influenced by the fact that, you know, after the first album, The Poison, they were on tour quite a lot. So it's your mm-hmm. first time like traveling so much and being away. And I think at least it feels like part of the song is influenced by that, that being far away from your loved ones and like, you know, wondering about it or being insecure about it. Right.
It does. Also have that, you know, how we start to assume our situation in another person's head. I don't have the lyrics written down for that.
It's like when you start getting anxious, there's a part. And you know, you start playing things out.
Getting anxious, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That part's there as well, and along with the feeling of longing for someone.
Yeah, you know, there is an acoustic version of the song as well. I'm not sure what album it was released on or how they released it, which I've heard. But I still prefer this one. I thought the acoustic one would be more interesting, and it is. But it's just the way the song is put together with the different guitar sounds and different layers. It's just so perfect, right?
It is.
Yeah.
I'm talking about not the song now. It's
yeah.
What you said, that the starting of this song has the sort of that, what term did you use? Clean guitar?
That clean, yeah, like clean. It's not like heavy distortion. It's like a, you know, clean
so that,
guitar sound.
That clean guitar sound is, I think, a signature of Metallica.
They you use know, a similar sound, yeah, in
so
a lot of their songs
that's,
as well.
And then how you explained, it sort of pierces through your ears and you just like it instantly.
Yeah.
So I think I can sort of connect how we also, I mean, it's the beginning of a Metallica song that you are already flowing into it. And mm-hmm. it's mostly the guitar riff in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. Yeah, and I think the ending of the song as well, like it ends on that like note, and I think it perfectly segues into the next song, which is Waking the Demon. And you know, in Waking the Demon, now the tone switches back to metal again, like they're trash metal, like sound metalcore even. So, you know, just to set the tone, I think one of the band members I've got a quote here. They said, you know, Waking the Demon is about finding someone's inner demon. Most of us in the band got pushed around in school. So the song is about getting tormented day in and day out for years. And then one day, snap, you know, fight back. And I think, you know, the song really does like capture that anger and frustration and that need for revenge and like then waking up that inner demon, right?
True.
It does capture that musically quite a bit.
There's also so this song was, I think, the first two or three times it felt like a ritual.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like a cult ritual.
No, I was just gonna say, I don't know if you've heard of the band HIM. It's almost like gothic metal, like Wings of a Butterfly or Vampire Hearts. And this song very much it reminds me of that type of music, that ritualistic, dark metal type tone. And I think that's what you're catching on right here.
Right. I mean,
musically so unique.
I think I've heard of him, but I can't remember the music. But this one, I sort of experimented with by setting an alarm, and the tone was the waking the demon, and you know, it worked.
Yeah,
because I said nice. I said it without vibrate, so the vibration doesn't wake me up; the sound does. And it worked. It did wake the demon.
Yeah, interesting way to start the day, Ravi. Right. And I've got to point out, you know, again, another completely ridiculous guitar solo. They're just push it up a notch with every song, I feel like. But yeah, you know, very great, very interestingly unique sound from the first three songs again. You know, it's more metal, but it still sounds different from like Scream, Aim, Fire, and Eye of the Storm. And, you know, then this song is followed by Disappear. And I think, you know, thematically, Disappear sort of follows on from the previous song, because Disappear, I think it's still about being hurt and then hurting that other person back.
So taking out the fire that sort of has pent up inside you against the bully.
Yeah, so they almost kind of work as like one song, like tonally or thematically, you could say. And again, you know, another completely intense guitar solo in Disappear. It's just crazy how many guitar solos these guys can come up with, and especially Padge, you know. And then, you know, from Disappear, we get to one of my favorite tracks again off the album, Deliver Us From Evil. You know, the intro just immediately hooks me in this song. I know it's just one of those songs that I just feel really, really, in a weird way, related to. Just to give you, like,
I just only have something to say about the lyrics. It's like a, you know, a fight back from pressure.
Yeah.
When you don't want to give in to the pressure. And I think there's a lot of, there is a reference of God as well in the lyrics, and or praying, something like that. You know, and along with that, I think there is a line. Do you have the lyrics in front of you?
I don't have the older lyrics, but what sort of line are you talking about? Like, do you remember?
So there's one line where he says something, deliver us from evil, and I pray that I don't, or something like that. I mean, it's basically the next verse itself has a God sort of reference in it.
Yeah.
And,
well, you know, just to give you context, actually. Writing. Yeah. So just to give you some context, the song was actually written around, like I mentioned, right? The singer went through the surgery. And there was this period where he was feeling like really sort of frustrated because of that, you know, he's never going to be able to recover from it. And, you know, I think his exact quotes were, there's like all this anger, frustration, depression, and negative feelings I brought into this song. And I think some of the lyrics also portray that, right? There's like, my body hurts too much, and pressure adds to pain. Again, you're talking about the pressure. And it's very much what you're saying, right? There's being a frontman of a band, being the lead singer, there are pressures on you, right? You have to perform, and your voice is like your main thing. So, you know, losing your voice, you're losing what makes you that frontman. And I think this, you can almost, you know, crumble under that pressure, which is not just the physical pain you're feeling, but all of this, you know, added social pressure you're feeling of being this lead member of the band. But yeah, I mean, you know, it, like you said, the lyrics is just very beautifully written around that, and it's sung in that way where you know, it really brings that out, I think, in the song. Right. And again, that guitar solo.
I mean,
Hey, do I need to mention?
I mean, there are guitar solos which I've mentioned, which sort of stood out for me. But yeah, it was just very interestingly written. And all of these songs are, you know, as we'll also go along, they're all very personal. Like, they've been experienced by the songwriter. And yeah, in this case,
they're not just abstract, right? There's something relatable within it.
And I think, you know, the singer sort of wanted to connect with the audience as well on some terms. Hence, he also included a few sort of themes that we'll get into later.
Yeah. And, you know, the song, towards the end, they repeat the, like, these two, three lines a bit, like the chorus lines. You know, the tank is empty, let it dry, I'm suffering. A passion ending, so the world keeps on turning. And I just love that part of the song anyway. And so, you know, it's just, it hooks me so well from the intro riff all the way to the ending and the way they end the song. It's always, you know, from the first time I heard this album, you know, Hearts Burst Into Fire was a song that really caught my attention. And this was another one that really grabbed my attention, just musically and lyrically. And I didn't even know much about the context around the song, or I didn't pay that much attention. It's just over time I learned, you know, what the story behind it is. But I've just always been very attracted to this song for some reason. One of my sort of go-to Bullet for My Valentine songs.
Interesting. I mean,
Good to
see the side of your project. Yeah.
I think you're going to see much more of it now in the upcoming albums that we're going to have. You know, from this song, we move on to Take It Out On Me. This song was actually written in collaboration with Benji Webb from another band like Skindred. And I think he sings part of the chorus as well. I'm not quite sure what part of the song he sings, but there's a part in the chorus I feel like is not Matt. I could be wrong. One of the screams. And what was your sort of thoughts?
There's a part, I think it connects dysfunction and family values, which I felt was something that, you know, it's the truth, but it's the kind of truth that no one wants to accept.
Interesting. Yeah, true. It's, I mean, like, you know, the song really feels about a little bit. Yeah, I mean, to me, like, it feels a little bit about sort of like having responsibilities or having things you need to do. And, you know, I don't know if you do it or not do it, but, and then you're the one that people lash out on, that it's like your fault. Like, you know, take it out on me, basically, is what the song says, right? But, you know, I think one thing that stands out in this song to me is, like, towards the middle of the song, there's, like, this... Mm-hmm. They have, again, that clean guitar sound. And there's, like, this build-up to the, you know, the guitar solo. And they're just singing, like, this fire burns inside, there's nowhere left to hide. And, like, it's just kind of... There's, like, this just build-up and build-up and build-up and build-up. And it just feels so epic up to the guitar solo. You know, in fact, there's, like... I've seen some live videos of it, and they do like a great version of it live, because like the audience is really into it, and you see like the you know, the bass, the rhythm, and the lead guitar, they got it all the way up, and they're just going at it, you know. So it's just this amazing moment they create with this build up. So even though I have other songs which are like favorites, if I could watch them live, you know, perform one song, it would be this one, Take It Out On Me, just because that section in the middle with the build-up, it just feels so epic. You know, it's just amazing. It's like, I don't know if you've seen Bill and Ted, but it's something like that, where, you know, they have that massive... Mm-hmm. Oh, you gotta watch it, man. But they have this massive, like, musical moment. I mean, you know, it's just amazing.
I mean, I only have something to say mostly about the lyrics, and
that's fair.
A few parts which where the music
stood
sort
out
of,
to you.
you know.
Well, I mean, look, I've heard a lot of these songs so many times now that it's, you know, when I hear it, or you know, when I'm making these notes, like so many things just jump out to me that I've observed, like over the years. So yeah, I mean, from this song, we then again, there's a tonal shift in the album a little bit as we move to Say Goodbye. Now, this song, I have a quote here from, you know, Jay, the bassist. And he said, basically, it's written about life and death. It's very personal to me because it happened to me a year and a half ago that my father passed away and my daughter was born. So someone comes in the world and someone goes out of the world. That's what the song is about. It's a very important song for me and the band because it was a hard time for us when this happened. And I think this really gives some context to the song, right? It starts with that rainfall. By the way, I think some of these quotes I got is from the Metal Hammer magazine, just to include the source. but yeah, so it, you know, it starts off with that mellow, like, rainfall. You can immediately feel this song is going to be a little different from the previous few songs. And, you know, all of these songs, they have these great guitar intros that really set them apart in tone a little bit, right, from the previous song.
Talking about the rain storm sound in the beginning.
Yeah, rain, and then also just the guitaring intro and everything musically. I mean, this also has that clean guitar sound present throughout.
If they added thunder to the rainstorm, if they added thunder to the rainstorm, that would be a clear reference to Riders on the Storm.
Oh, yeah. true. But yeah, I mean, I think you only hear the rain a little bit in the beginning, but I don't think it comes back. Then once the song starts, it just goes on. And again, I think great use of harmony. I think Hearts Burst Into Fire, they use the, like, the vocal harmony really well, in a very different way than a lot of metal songs use them. And I think this song as well, the harmony, I think, stands out a little bit. But, you know, the lyrics, I mean, after reading that quote from Jay, you know, the lyrics are very sort of evident, you know, seeing your face reflect from our baby's eyes. It's very literal in the sense of what Jay was talking about. And so what you were saying earlier about a lot of these songs being personal, right, it really just goes to that.
I mean, it's, and, you know, just singing these lines where, you know, I have to live every day seeing your eyes and the baby it's the most, I mean, that's something that people will attach to immediately. I mean, that's like soul right there. But also, I mean, you know, sort of a life of struggle is what makes an artist.
Imagine taking clips from Breaking Bad and overlaying this song over it.
I'll try that. But just want to add something about Say Goodnight so that I'm on record.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just fell in love with the intro guitar riff. I mean, I think it was the first late evening night when I was just... the lights were off and it was playing on the speakers and this song just played and I sort of felt so refreshed and I played the song back and back. I mean, back to back a few times after that. And that intro guitar riff was something that got me hooked. I mean, the lyrics came after I got to know about Bullet for My Valentine. The guitar riff is what I think this was one of the first songs that, you know, sort of put me into the album that, okay, this is an album that I can listen to on repeat.
I mean, you know, some of the best songs are songs that are rooted in like a personal experience or event, life event that has happened, right? A lot of art is created out of that. So I think it reflects a little bit in some of the writing in this album. So then again from Say Goodbye, there's a sort of a tonal shift. We get to End of Days. And I think this song is one of the songs, I think lyrically, it's more of just, you know, it. So I guess the concept of the song is more about, you know, the end. I think this was in an interview again that they mentioned, like, if you had 24 hours to live, how would you live it? You know, would you go, you know, take drugs and get smashed or whatever? Or would you go to your loved ones and your family? And there's a little bit of that in the song, but it really is just about knowing that the end is close, right? Like, there's a line, no more sorrows, no tomorrows. I've never felt alive before. And it's like, when you know you're going to die, you live life to the fullest in a way, right? If anyone's seen Breaking Bad.
It's something I want to add to. I just had a lot of questions, actually, for End of Days. And especially questions at the 3-minute mark, where it's, I mean, the sort of music is just, I mean, I had, as I said, I had questions in my head I don't know if that's an interlude or not, but in that section, I had questions which sort of ended in a superhero landing.
You're gonna do a superhero landing. Wait for it.
Okay.
I mean, if you listen back to it with this thought, maybe you see a superhero landing.
Definitely, I'll give that a go.
One of the classic Deadpool superhero landings.
And also, you know, again, like, I guess I don't need to mention it anymore, but that guitar solo in this song is also just like off the charts. I mean, like, if just in general in this song, if you just try to listen to the guitar part, like, isolated, it's just really impressive how complex it is. Because, like, there's so much going on, it can be sometimes hard to appreciate how complex, you know, the rhythm is that's being played in general, and how the different melodies are working together. They do use this, like, cool stereo effect. I think it's only, like, twice throughout the song. But it is, you know, every song, I think, musically, they're really trying hard in terms of the techniques that are being used to make it stand apart and to make it something unique. And I think it comes out really well.
Right. I mean, as you said, it's something, I think what you're saying is something that a guitarist especially, a lot of musicians and a guitarist especially would actually understand. For example, if I'm watching something, an animated cartoon video of visual effects, I see the work that's put in and over here, I think it's the same that you're seeing. And you can appreciate it better because you know how many layers have gone in, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's so challenging what they do, and it's just, you know, I think it's quite unique to their sound as well. So yeah, I mean, you know, moving from End of Days, we come to Last to Know, and you know, this song, again, just some context. It's from one of the interviews that I read, I think it's more about, you know, their haters or you know, critics in a sense. Like, they made the first album, The Poison. You know, it was quite successful, but at the same time, you know, if you're successful, you tend to get a lot of haters, like people saying you don't know what you're playing or your music's crap. And I think this song is kind of just addressed to them. And it's very evident lyrically as well. Like, it starts off, you know, like, here come broken bones, wear your sticks and stones. You know, like, sticks and stones don't break my bones. So, like, they, you know, and then they have, like, that chorus part as well, hypocrisy from jealousy, which is, again, playing to that part of, like, a lot of this hater culture or counterculture that evolves around any artist or musician. There is an element of it that's rooted in jealousy. Either they feel jealous that they can't do it, or they feel that their favorite artist is taking a backseat because of this new band or album. So it's a lot of complex emotions, but this song is basically just like, screw you, you know? Like, why are you like this? Am I the last to know?
To cover the hate, I think it's what they are referring to exactly is blind hate, you know, where you don't have a reason to, exactly. But you just hate because I think blind hate then entails jealousy and hypocrisy as well.
And you know, you never give it a chance. You're just so focused on hating it for the sake of hating it. And I think it's just some of that frustration coming out. And going back to what you were saying, right, like the songs being rooted in a personal sort of meaning, personal experience, I think. You know, one of the things, again, I noticed regarding the guitar, you know, the part where he's sort of more sort of shouting, the guitar riff, again, is like super fast, and it's interesting the way he does it. But it is very similar to the guitar riff from Eye of the Storm, especially the chorus. Is this something that when I was listening to it recently, you know, it just stood out to me that, wait, this sounds very similar to the chorus of Eye of the Storm. So I don't know, I just thought that was interesting to point out.
I mean, now that you say it, and now if I listen to it,
You'll notice it. It's basically the chorus of Eye of the Storm, and then if you listen to just that part, the verse when he's like shouting the lyrics, it's very similar musically what they're doing on the guitars. So. So and then from this song we get to Forever and Always, which is, this song is I think the last song of the album when it was released. Because the four songs after this are sort of more bonus tracks. But I thought it's a great song for them to end the album at the time that it sort of came out, right?
I mean, I think the lyrics are referring to the wife, while, I mean, you can clearly take it for love in this case. I mean,
interesting
for
you an say audience that, yeah. to connect. So, So, I mean, because the song is sort of about, you know, like, forever and always, like lasting forever, sort of whatever they've gone through, right? Like holding on to that. But from one of the interviews I read, it was actually written in context of them performing live, that like they never want to give up this being in an arena full of people, like having that connection and that moment with their audience, and it's about like hanging on to that. And, you know, whatever happens, would they keep on doing that? But again, the way it's written is you can very easily take it in a romantic way or you know, like a relationship, trying to hang on to that relationship to make it work almost, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, connecting back to what the singer-songwriter said, they want areas to connect with or themes to connect with the audience. While they're just telling their personal stories.
Yeah, exactly right. That's essentially what you got here. And, you know, I think musically, again, this song is more of, it's not as much as metal. It's more of almost like alt rock sort of sound, right? But I just think starting from Scream Aim Fire, which kind of throws you at the deep end all the way, you know, with the double bass and the guitaring and everything. And then ending on this song, which is much more, it's much smoother. You know, the ending of the song is essentially just some guitar, drums, and synth, but it's a very different type of music being played. It's not that hardcore metal being played. It's more like alt rock, you know. And they've got that arena sound as well in the outro. Sort of that echo almost on the drums. I just think it's a very interesting way to end it. Like, you start all hardcore, you know, you throw the person at the deep end, like, this is it. And then you end them on a much more sort of mellower note, for the original release anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, taking that graph into mind, it's like, I mean, it's the opposite of what people generally or artists generally do, right? Like taking from the shallow to the deep. Here, it's from deep to the shallow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because this one's the more general in terms of lyrics as well. It's the general one over here.
It's more like mainstream appeal in a sense, in the way the music is. But man, again, that guitar riff is really awesome. Like all of these songs, they have really good intros and guitar riffs and stuff that just really hook you right throughout the song. You're really like turned on and like you're in it. But yeah, I mean, so this is where the original album ended. Now, in the deluxe version, they have four more songs. So the next one that they have is Road to Nowhere, you know, the first bonus track. And this one, I think, you know, the first half is like all acoustic, which is very different from, again, the songs that were there in the album. Because it's actually completely acoustic. It's not just like a clean guitar sound with some electric playing. Right. And I think Matt carries the first half really well with the acoustic sound and just his singing before like all the other instruments really kick in.
Yeah, I think the three songs, The Road to Nowhere and the next two, are sort of, they have that a complete different feeling from the rest of the album. Or at least, you know, there are parts which you can connect to the album, but there are parts which are completely new for, I mean, someone like me who was listening to this whole album in one go for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are bonus tracks. You know, they do set apart a little bit. And I think, you know, Road to Nowhere, it's essentially just a breakup song. And hence, you know, it starts off even with that sort of mellow guitar sound.
Repetitive breakup. If you move on, or repetitive goodbyes.
Yeah, but this sort of breakup part, or this like relationship, dysfunctional relationship, it sort of escalates, right? So you start with Road to Nowhere, then we go to Watch Us Die Tonight, which is much more intense. It's again about a relationship sort of breaking down.
Dying relationship.
You know, I mean, this part in the bridge, I think it is. It's like everything will be all right. I'm watching us die tonight. I don't know. It just really gets me, like that bridge part, because it really, you know, it feels again very personal, the way it is, right? And the music, you know, the guitaring from the intro and the outro, it has some really cool elements. You know, again, it doesn't really have a guitar solo, but it's got some crazy guitar stuff going on nonetheless.
There's one part where I don't know the exact part, but it's that they've cheated, or like there's this sort of you know, this sort of ambiguous thought which is that he was drunk, so he got to know about it quite later. I mean, he sort of understood it quite late. I mean, there's that ambiguity that it sort of adds to this particular song is not there in any of the other songs that I read through, like, the lyrics.
Yeah, and definitely, I think in the lyrics, it's implied, I think, that she cheated on him and something like that, right? It's a bit darker than Road to Nowhere. And then, you know, that takes me to the third bonus track, One Good Reason Why, which is again about a relationship sort of not working, but this is dark. Like, this is about getting revenge. So the first three bonus tracks, the way they work is just very interesting. You know, each one just escalating it a little bit more, but this one kind of just pushes the line, or crosses the line, you could say. You know, it's really about getting your revenge physically and emotionally from that other person, right?
Yeah. It's just, this person being tired of his wife never being home on time, just mistakes keep happening and she's not doing anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, why should I give you my love? You know, I mean, he's realized something is wrong in that relationship with his partner, and it's like, but at the same time, there's a lot of anger and frustration pent up because of that that's coming out. You know, I really like that part in the song as well. Like, just musically, like the melody, like that, like body shaking, darkness. Right. It's just, I don't know. It just really hooks me again. Like a lot of the parts from other songs, they all have this unique part of it, which is just so catchy musically. But it still fits in really well with the metal sound. You know, it's not too pop, but it just that perfect balance of metal, but as well as it being something that's melodious, that has a melody. And again, I don't think it has a proper guitar solo. It does have a, like, bits of solos, or like a musical interlude, but not a proper full-on solo. And then from this, we get to the last bonus track, Ashes of the Innocent. Interestingly, the last bonus track, pushes you back into that hardcore, you know, metalcore sound.
Yeah.
That crazy double bass, right? It's very interesting to like think, you know, the main album starts with Scream Aim Fire pushing you at the deep end, ends with Forever and Always, which is like, you know, a bit slower, a bit more like alt rock. And then the first bonus track carries on that tone from Forever and Always and Road to Nowhere with that sort of acoustic sound. But then the album ends again pushing you right in that metalcore sound with Ashes of the Innocent, with all the screaming and, you know, the double bass and the themes about death and all of that, you know. And again, a crazy, crazy guitar solo that this song has.
And this, I mean, by One Good Reason Why, the one before this, yeah. I sort of had my hopes up for the fourth one to be, you know, a sort of a completely new side maybe that I'll sort of get into or listen to of Bullet for My Valentine. But yeah. It just was, I mean, I was back to, I think, not Scream Aim Fire, I think Waking the Demon or something.
Yeah, Waking the Demon is a very good way of Ashes of the Innocent. I mean, it feels very much like that type of gothic structure. You know, it's sort of about death and stuff. But like throughout, you know, I would say if you just look at this deluxe album as well, track by track, they always like subvert your expectations. Because if the song ends and you might have some expectations of how the next few tracks are going to go, I feel like for most people, the way it actually plays out is very different from what you were maybe expecting. And for me, that works really well because it's like constantly subverting your expectations of what you think this album should have or should end at or should start with. They just do a complete U-turn to what you expect.
Which connects back to them starting out with the idea that, you know, we're not going to do the mainstream. We're going to do, you know, something that we like doing. And people might like it. People might not. Well, we've got people like
they do it in their own way, right? Yeah, true. I mean, I guess we're summarizing now, you know, the album.
Yeah.
I think one thing this album really did, it really wanted me to pick up my electric guitar again and start playing. But, you know, I'm sort of in the middle of Homes at the moment. But in a way, I guess it's good I didn't, because, you know, I can't play that fast, at least not anymore. So that would have been a bit depressing to pick up the electric guitar and be like, I can't play any of this. Right. So it's good to just imagine, right? That I'm playing it.
I'd rather imagine you trying to play some of the Bullet for My Valentine in a Harry Potter kind of under the door under the stairs cabinet.
Just like by myself, right? Just like hiding in my closet, you, trying to play some guitar. Like don't, yeah, swim with some headphones
with your amp right there,
struggling. but yeah, I think, you know, this album, Scream Aim Fire, it has to be one of my sort of favorite albums, metal albums, at least. You know, I used to listen to this a lot, and I guess at some point I stopped and, you know, I started listening to different types of music. But listening to it again, it brought me back into that mindset, you know, of why I loved this type of music so much. And, you know, it's really unique sound. They've got their own way of doing things. The guitaring, like I said, the songs are much more complex than they appear to be when you listen to them for the first time. And you know, that's true for the metal genre in general. You know, metal songs are very complex generally, musically. They're so intense. But, you know, speed metal, I mean, trash metal like they have here, it's just, there's so much going on musically in each song that it's just, every time I hear it, even now, you know, the bits or pieces of the song that stand out that I might not have noticed before. But yeah, I mean, what was your overall sort of perspective on this, right? Not being a,
so it's just
like not being someone, I mean, from a metal background.
I mean, as I said, it took me time to get into, you know, firstly accepting that, okay, I'm just gonna be listening to this for a while now. And then once I was into it, I think, as I said, it was Say Goodnight. Yeah, Say Goodnight, which made me come back to it. And then after that, it was Hearts Burst into Fire. I mean, there were songs like these few songs that sort of stood out and got me back to it. I mean, and I made it a point to get through all the songs and get to that song, but so that also sort of got me in the zones that the other songs are supposed to. I was trying.
No, it's interesting. No, it's very interesting because I mean, like, I feel like metal specifically, right? It's a very like acquired taste. It's difficult to appreciate it the first time you hear it. It's like the first time you drink beer, right? It's not going to taste. I don't know what you'd expect, but it's not how beer tastes like. But over time, you learn to appreciate the taste. And I think metal is the same. But with an album like this, Scream Aim Fire, you know, having those songs like Say Goodbye and Hearts Burst Into Fire and Forever and Always, you know, those softer songs, I think it eases you into it a little bit because you start to appreciate the music more through the songs that you initially connect more with. And then you begin to connect with the other songs that initially maybe were too abrupt or too different from the type of music that you're used to. So that's why I feel like that's one of the reasons I think, you know, for The Poison and this album, you know, that it received so much acclaim and it got so popular was because it wasn't just your metal. It had ways of reaching out to the audience outside of your core metal listeners, right?
I mean, I would want to add a point, which is, you know, completely not what you'd expect. But when I got to know of some background of Bullet for My Valentine and also a little bit on the album, it, and then as I got into deeper into the songs, it's more like a you know, like a rap album, as rap albums are, sort of, you know, putting your personal perspective into words and just, you know, putting it into a beat over here. That's, I mean, they've done a completely different job than a rapper would. And along with that, then, because this was in my mind when we started discussing of how personal songs are and how they actually are, because there's backstory behind a few of them. The one good reason why that we just spoke about, that sort of also the lyrics put me in the zone of or Guilty Conscience's first segment.
Guilty Conscience, right. Eminem, right?
So that first segment where
that it's type of frustration and
so there's the liquor store. No, the first one. It's the one where you know, Shady wears your gun hat or something like that.
When he's robbing the liquor store.
He goes back to his trailer pack.
Yeah.
No, he's going back to his trailer.
That's the last one, right? When he finds it, when he finds her cheating on him.
I think there was another song which was connecting to a liquor store. Was it?
I'm not quite sure.
Anyway, yeah, so that Guilty Conscience is one song that sort of hit me going from the lyrics itself.
And since we've spoken about One Good Reason Why, like, since I said it, I can't get that body shaking, darkness fading, that, you know, that hook part out of my head. It's like, it's just been playing on repeat, just two lines over and over. But that's what this album, I think, does to you in the end, right? I think, regardless if you like all the songs or not, I think a lot of the songs have parts of them which will get stuck in your head just because they're so intense or they're so catchy.
In the beginning itself, there's Scream Aim Fire, where I just found myself, you know, roaring Scream Aim Fire every now and then.
You're on the bus and then you just start screaming. Yeah.
I can't explain the feeling. It's just, I was quite conscious of where I was. But
that's good. Yeah. It's good.
You know, but Scream, I mean, there are parts of then Hearts Burst Into Fire. Then there are parts of Waking the Demon as well. where I was just, just one line or two lines of it, and just on repeat, that's in my head. And maybe if it was a raw part, I did try it out as well for Scream Fire, for example. So yeah, I mean, it
Anyways,
took,
I think
yeah.
it's what you're saying is absolutely true, right? It's just the parts of the song that really get, that you it's hard to get it out of your head. And I'm excited to actually go over some of their other albums as well, including The Poison. But I did really wanted to start with Screaming Fire just 'cause how much this album has meant to me over the years. Yeah, I mean,
That's
any other
interesting.
final thoughts, Rezi, before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I just want to say the intro guitar riff in "Say Goodnight" is off the charts.
It's so good, right? Yeah, well, I'm glad you
It's
enjoyed this. I
completely
didn't
off
know
the
what to
charts.
expect. I didn't know what to expect today. I knew that you had heard some. I knew you had like Tears Don't Fall and certain other songs from Bullet for My Valentine, and that you'd heard some of like Metallica and like Iron Maiden and Led Zeppelin and stuff from, before that were like precursor to this type of music. But I don't think you've ever listened to a full metal album like back to back like this, right?
I haven't. This was the first
So
time, yeah.
I was curious to see what your experience is like. I'm glad you enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, there are those, as you've mentioned a couple of times, there are those sick guitar riffs which are just off the
Yeah, and solos, man.
charts.
Some of those guitar solos are just crazy. But yeah, so I think that wraps it up, guys. I think we need a guitar solo to wrap this up, Rosie. But yeah, I mean, thank you very much, guys, for tuning in, and we will see you next week with another discussion. I think, well, we've already said it. I think it's going to be 30 Seconds to Mars, but we're not quite sure which album yet. So stay tuned.
I am, I think so. See
All right.
you guys.
Yeah.
Wait. I